With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
It's time to get green. Doug Oster and Jessica Walliser are in the house. All natural, no pesticides, no artificial ingredients. The Organic Gardeners. News Radio 1020 KDK.
Both part of that TribLive.com brand. It is Doug Oster, EverybodyGardens.com as well, along with Jessica Walliser, award-winning author. And yes, your phone calls right now. And every single line is wide open. Nothing better to warm you up on this very frigid Sunday morning than thinking spring and thinking gardening. So get on the line, 866-391-1020 or Dollar Bank Instant Access, KDKA.com. And right now, the 10th caller at 412-922-1020, something that makes everybody warm up. They do great work out at Sorgles in Wexford. So if you're the 10th caller, you'll get that $25 gift certificate. But right now, here they are, the stars of the show, Doug Oster and Jessica Walliser. Good morning, you two, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. I am Doug Oster from the Tribune Review and EverybodyGardens.com.
And I'm horticulturist Jessica Walliser, and we're all frozen.
Oh.
It's cold in the studio, but it's not as cold as it is outside, which my car said minus four this morning. That's
yeah,
cold.
Mine said minus three, and then when I came through the tunnels, it went up to three above. But
ooh.
I don't know how accurate that is. Hey, something I wanted to reference from last week was a tomato. A caller called about a tomato that we talked about a couple weeks ago, but I couldn't find it on my phone during the show, and I looked it up last night. Atlas is the name of this tomato from Burpee. That's a container tomato, only it puts on big, meaty tomatoes, puts on one-pound tomatoes. So I had a caller ask about that, and I could, for the life of me, could not find it on my
phone. Did it come
to
you at like 2 a.m.? That's usually what happens to me.
No, I had it in my mind all week. I was like, okay. I got to look for that.
And then by the morning, I forget it. That's a problem when it comes to you at 2 or 3 a.m., and then you're like, oh, I'm going to remember that. And then you wake up and you don't remember.
Where do you get to be my age? You won't remember anything. So you took your tree down.
We did. We took our Christmas tree down. It's right now, we had a little one in the family room and a big one in the living room. And so they're out back right by the bird feeders.
Yeah, you know, somehow recycle that tree.
Yep.
Can't go to the landfill. You certainly don't want that. But a lot of municipalities recycle them. We haven't taken ours down yet, but I always put mine in the same place. And it's kind of like a little rabbit haven down there in the woods for it. And yeah. I know the rabbits come to the garden, but you got to help out the wildlife. You know, it'd be a good place for the birds to hide before they come to the feeder, that sort of thing. That's another thing is when it's this cold, boy, keeping those feeders filled up, give them some suet. We always want to help the birds. I do. I actually went for a hike yesterday. I couldn't stand being inside anymore. So
I hope you were bundled up.
Yeah, it wasn't bad at all. You know, it was about 6 degrees, 7 degrees.
Oh, that's not bad.
Well, I mean, you'd think, but you get the clothes on, you get the layers on.
You get moving.
Start moving, you know.
Yeah.
It was fun, actually. It was really fun.
Yeah, my son was talking about going out and sledding, and I was like, let's wait.
Yeah, there was no one at the sledding hill at this park. So.
Yeah.
In fact, there was no one except the one other guy with a dog at the park. That was it. We had the park all to ourselves. So
when they talk about your skin freezing, you know, any bit of uncovered skin, I was like, yeah, let's hold off a day. And now we're supposed to get more, what did they say, 2 to 4 inches now on Monday night. I think they just said on
the snow will be a good insulator.
There you go. Yeah. a very good insulator for something that you could go out and plant right now, which seems a little odd that you could head out to your garden even when it's snow covered and plant something. But there is something that you can plant now and should be planting within the next few weeks if you haven't already. And that is, I know I would ask you to guess, but you got the paper right in front of you, our little note sheet here, but it's milkweed. So as most of our listeners probably know, milkweed is the only host plant for the monarch butterfly, and monarchs could use our help right now. There's lots of different species of milkweeds out there. In fact, I think there's 70 different species native to North America, so you have lots of choices with milkweed. And now is a good time to sow the seeds. And the reason being is because the seeds must go through a cold period, which is called stratification. So it has to go through, 6-8 weeks of cold temperatures in order to initiate germination of that seed. So if you have you know, milkweed plants that naturally drop their seeds, that's perfect because they're naturally going through that cold period. But if you buy the seeds from your favorite seed catalog, you want to do it now because you want to get them out into the garden as quickly as possible. And the great part about it is it doesn't require anything to sow it. They need light to germinate, so you can just drop them on top of the snow. Or, you know, wait till scrape the snow aside a little bit and spread them out on the surface of the soil, and they'll germinate just exactly where they fall. So it's hard to believe that you can still be planting something right now, but you can. So it's a good idea to go out and plant your milkweed.
All right. Hey, congratulations to Gerald from Allison Park, the winner of that gift certificate from Sorgles. Don't forget, we still have that great gift certificate to give away from Janoski's. We'd love to hear from you, too, as well, at 866-391-1020. Dollar Bank Instant Access, KDKA.com.
Doug and Jessica teach you how to keep it green. The Organic Gardeners. News Radio 1020, KDK.
All right, any other business before we go to the phones?
Yeah, I'm going to be in Baltimore this week at a thing called the Mid-Atlantic Nursery Trade Show. It's this big, giant trade show with all the new gardening stuff comes out, new plants and nice accessories and everything. So I'll be reporting on that starting Wednesday. And I go every year. I love going. It's going to be a lot of fun. And
are you here next week?
No, I'm not. I'm actually, then I'll be in Florida fishing.
Jess? I'll be here. Good. I'll be here.
Good, because me doing this show alone, that's scary. All right. 866-391-1020. First, you get the seeds. I wouldn't even know where to begin. Let's go to Lynn in McCandless. Lynn, how you doing? Good morning. Welcome to the Organic Gardeners with Doug and Jess on KDK.
Good morning. Great show. Happy New Year, all. I just wanted to ask you, just lately, in the last week, I have had two, and now I have 3 mounds of dirt in my yard. They're the size of dinner plates and maybe about 3 or 4 inches high. We've had moles before, mm-hmm, but these are big. There's no hole in the top. There's no tracks. I just wondered, what animal do you think it would be?
It's moles. You have moles. They're in my yard as well. That's a very telltale sign of them, that mound of dirt in the middle of the turf grass. Sometimes there's a hole in it, in the center of it. Sometimes there's not. It depends on how they dig the hole and all that stuff. They are subterranean, so they live underground. And this normally is not the time of year when we see them because the ground is frozen and they're down deeper in the soil. But up until this recent cold snap, we have had them, and I've found quite a few in my yard. So you can look at it one of two ways, right? Doug, how do you look at them?
Yeah. Moles are great for the garden unless you can't stand where they're at. You know,
yeah,
you have to walk through all those tunnels and everything. They're aerate the soil. They eat grubs, and they leave a little fertilizer behind. So if they're in a perennial bed, if they're in the vegetable garden, I don't care, as long as it's moles and not voles.
Right.
It doesn't bother me, but again, if you can't stand the way those mounds are, when we get to the spring, I like that, it just went out of my head, mole scram.
Mm-hmm.
It's organic, castor oil, garlic-based, granular thing, and you kind of make a band of it close to the house and work the band every day a little further away, and you force those moles to go over to your neighbor's house where they could destroy their lawn.
Okay, one thing I heard one time is you put Juicy Fruit gum down little holes,
yeah,
in
that
the yard.
That doesn't work because moles are strict insectivores. They only eat insects.
Okay.
Now, with voles are a different beast. They're the ones that eat your plants and tubers, and they can get in the vegetable garden and gnaw on, you know, your cabbage roots and things like that. They are a whole different beast, and they live in big colonies. The moles are the ones that live solitary out in your lawn and make those mounds of soil like that. So, no, Juicy Fruit gum will not do a darn thing, because unless you find Juicy Fruit gum that tastes like an earthworm or a grub, you're out of luck. So.
Yeah. It's not a very popular flavor.
No.
Yeah. Yes. Earthworm.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Happy New Year.
Let's say hi to June. Hey, June. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. I had a problem with my basil over the summer, mm-hmm, with the mildew.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember you had mentioned that there was, you had to get seeds that were immune or whatever you call it. Where can I get those seeds? Because I can't live without basil.
Yeah, so it's basil downy mildew. It's a relatively new pathogen, and it can completely wipe out your basil crops.
It I mean, did.
The commercial growers are really struggling. So, you know, what we could have been talking about one of two things when it comes to the seeds. This is a pathogen that, unlike a lot of other pathogens, is actually carried in the seed. So, you know, you have to buy from a source that can actually certify and verify, that has done pathology testing on it, to make sure that they are disease free when you start. Now, that's not to say that the spores aren't going to blow in on the wind and infect the plant later, but that at least is a good start. They are starting to breed some varieties that are resistant to basil downy mildew, but I don't think at this time that there are any on the market as far as sweet basil goes.
I'll find out in Baltimore.
Okay.
As far as sweet basil.
Now, there's other besides sweet basil. So, like, lemon basil is more resistant to it. The red basil, what they call opal basil, that's more resistant to it. Greek basil is more resistant.
Probably African blue basil. That's
African blue, yep. So,
what about spicy globe?
I was going to say the small-leaved varieties, like those dwarf ones, like spicy globe, they're more resistant. And it seems to really target those big-leaved sweet basil varieties. I know they are. I know. But like I said, they are breeding. And maybe, Doug, that should be something you could definitely be on the lookout for our listeners, of a company that has bred a resistant.
Certainly seed companies are really making sure that the seed isn't going to be infected. What happens, like you said, when it's out in the field, there's no one can control that. I always say now with this disease, I'm planting a couple different crops. Well,
yep.
I always plant a couple different crops of basil. Always keep it going to try. If some get infected, maybe the other ones won't.
Do some in containers.
Yeah.
Start some from seed, but also start some from plants.
That's what I've done. I really have done that. It was just devastating last year. At least I got some early on.
Yeah.
But it was like halfway through, and I usually plant like 15 big things of basil because I just love it. So many recipes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And hedge your bets by doing different varieties, because even amongst the existing varieties, some may be more resistant than others. So don't plant all, you know, Genovese, or don't plant all of one particular variety. Get different varieties going in the garden just to test their natural resistance as well.
Okay. That's a help. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go to John in Bethel. Hey, John, good morning. Welcome to the Organic Gardeners on KDKA.
Good morning. I'm a relatively new dahlia gardener, and I tried to follow your directions. I cut them down after they froze, and I let them sit underground for a while, and I dug them up, and I got some big clumps. And I'm thinking about dividing them, and one of the questions that occurred to me is, what happens to dahlias that are planted in warmer weather where they don't dig them up? Do they just keep growing the way they are?
Yeah, it becomes what we call a dahlia jungle. Yeah, they'll just keep going. I mean, even, of course, this weather, no dahlias are probably going to make it. But in the last few winters, we've had where they've overwintered. Yeah, and you'll get, there's an eye on that tuber, it's going to send up another stalk. If it was me and I was growing in a warm climate, I would probably be digging them up and separating them, because I would want them to be, you know, one big tuber starting out and with a big stalk and be able to do its thing. But that would be interesting to see. I've never really seen that, where like a perennial dahlia bed.
I was just wondering if you could just obviously take off the dahlia tubers that are bad in any way, wrinkled or rotten. But what if you put a bunch just back in the ground the way they were?
Be a fun experiment.
Yeah. Okay. I think I'll try. Just some each way and see what happens.
You know, I always talk about, when we talk about dahlias, is when we get to the spring, the Greater Pittsburgh Dahlia Society has these two auctions that I just love. And it's a great way to add dahlias to your garden really inexpensively and get really cool stuff that you couldn't get anywhere else. It's one of the best gardening events you could ever imagine. It's in the paper, or you can look at the Greater Pittsburgh Dahlia Society's website, and there's usually one third week of April and then one in May. The one in April is just for the tubers. Then in May, the plants will already be sprouted. But all these great growers, with all their tubers, they're sharing their tubers, and for, you know, just a few bucks, you can get some really, really cool stuff. And then you'll really be hooked. And
I'm hooked already. I've already got my 50 of them. So
that sounds awesome.
Just gonna keep going. I just love them. Okay. Hey, thank you for the advice.
Thank you.
All right, our lines are open if you want to join us. 866-391-1020, Dollar Bank, Instant Access, KDK.com.
The other thing about dahlias is Proven Winners, and I found this out a couple years ago at Mance, has a variety out, and of course I can't remember the name. I'll try and look it up. But that isn't as day length sensitive. And so it blooms earlier and it doesn't really make tubers.
Huh.
And so I write about it all the time, but of course I can't remember anything I write about or even my own name sometimes.
But you can remember every detail about every 1960s TV show.
Yeah, off the air we were talking about Jerry Van Dyke's My Mother the Car. Yes, I can remember who played
and who and the
what,
voice was,
what the car
and what
was
the
and everything, but I can't remember anything important.
And I'm exactly the opposite. I can remember all the botanical names and all the stuff about plants, but then can't remember anything else.
That's why we're such a great team.
But that's right. There you go. We make up for each other's shortcomings.
You know
right?
the Latin names. I know that Ann Southern was My Mother the Car.
There is a dahlia that's I wanted to tell you about real quick. That if you haven't grown this one worth trying, it's called Creme de Cassis. And it the top side of the petals is like a wine colored burgundy, and the underside of the petals is creamy lavender, and they sort of twist and curve, and it's a really cool, unique dahlia, and it's one that I think I'm going to grow this year for sure. I saw it in a catalog. I was like, whoa, that's cool.
There's one called Duet that was actually bred from a Pittsburgher, and it's become just a, you know, very easy to find, really cool. It's white and maroon kind of variegated flower, but just that it has a Pittsburgh history is cool. When I traveled to Amsterdam for a garden tour, the first thing at the flower market I saw was Duet. And I was like, oh, I came all the way to Holland and here's a...
And it's bred by a Pittsburgher.
And here's a guy that was bred by
well,
a Pittsburgher.
That's really cool.
And I did a story on that years ago. I can't remember the name of the gentleman who did it, but it came from my friend Dan Cummings. He gave me the tip on the story. And so whenever I see Duet, I always think, Pittsburgh dahlia.
Yeah. I only really grow maybe 3-4 dahlias in my garden every year. I don't always overwinter the tubers because I like to try new ones every year.
That is,
see the different color combinations.
That is a great point because a lot of people won't grow dahlias because, well, I don't want to save the tuber. Well, don't.
Just grow them as an annual.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. Just don't deny yourself the beauty of dahlias.
Right. But I had one that you were talking about before that came back last year that I couldn't believe. I'm like, that is a dahlia sprouting up out of the ground.
I had one, I don't know if it was last year or the year before, just a pure yellow one that... that did the same thing, but I don't think this year.
Not with this winter. Yeah. We'll be lucky, I think, sometimes if some of the things that are fully hardy will come back after crazy temperature like this, especially if the ground was really wet.
Yeah, I'm worried about some of my marginal plants. I grow that one rose, Zephrine Drohine.
Yeah.
And it's a zone 6.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and since it's a climber, it's so exposed. You know, you've got 20 feet of... I've had it die all the way back to the ground, and polar vortex, I lost it.
Mm.
So I'll be interested to see what happens when
it'll be interesting
when we get to the
spring. Leland cypresses, too, if anybody has any of those. Because if you remember when we had that polar vortex, we had three beautiful Leland cypress on the side of the house, and all three of them just completely died because, again, it's a marginal plant. And that was so sad because they were 10, 12 feet tall. They were just getting to the point where they blocked out the view we wanted to block. And then that was that. So.
My son put like 20 of them in for the same reason down in Virginia.
Yeah.
And I got a text. What do you do about the bucks rubbing trees?
Oh.
Emergency needed right now.
Oh.
Took like two or three of them. Probably killed them.
Oh, you know? But at least they're more hardy there. So, although I don't know, they've had some pretty cold temperatures
down there,
too.
Yeah, he texted me 11 degrees down there, which is really cold for them.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's not quite polar vortex, which was like minus 20, but that is marginal for them. So, it'll be interesting to see if they survive or not. It depends on how sheltered they are and stuff like that, too. So,
cyclobombogenesis, kind of the description of my life, ladies and gentlemen. All right, what in the heck is a cyclobombogenesis?
It's a great name for a band, I gotta say that.
You know what? That'd
ladies and gentlemen, cyclobombogenesis!
Good night. You've been a great audience.
Hello, Pittsburgh.
All right, listen, we'll take a very short break. As a matter of fact, it'll be so short it'll seem like we never left. Really? Yep. All right, so please stay with us. 866-391-1020 or Dollar Bank Instant Access, KDK.com. Next stop, we head out to the frigid part of Pennsylvania known as Clarion County to talk to one of our favorite listeners, Brad, in just a couple of moments. Good morning.
Doug and Jessica teach you how to keep it green. The Organic Gardeners. Biz Radio 1020, KDKA.
Hey, the good folks at Genasi getting revved up for their big Valentine's Day buffet. We'll tell you more about that in a moment. But how about a gift certificate right now? I'll tell you what, it'd be a nice day to get a good breakfast at the country restaurant, too, up there in Clinton. If you're the 10th caller at 412-922-1020, you'll win a $25 gift certificate from Janoski's in Clinton. Let's go to Clarion County, as promised, and say good morning to Brad. Brad, welcome to KDK. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great. I had a question for the gardeners this morning. My daughter got us a beautiful poinsettia before Christmas, and she called it a jingle bell poinsettia. And the only thing different about it, it's really bright red, but it's got white spots all over the flowers. Now, the problem I have is the green part of it. The green leaves are all wilted and falling off, but the flowers are still beautiful. And I don't suppose there's anything to do about recovering those green leaves, but I was wondering what might have caused that.
Well, the good news about the poinsettia is that it is a good windowsill plant. Now, a lot of times when they go from the greenhouse to indoors, they're going to lose some leaves. Sometimes if they're overwatered, they're going to lose leaves. You got to be really careful on the watering. I've actually got one that has been in the inside for, I think, two seasons now. And the green leaves look more like pale green.
Mm.
You know, they're just kind of poking along. But I keep them really on the dry side.
Are you removing the basket or the foil when you water and allowing that water to drain out?
We have a plate sitting underneath it with a paper towel on it.
Okay, so
the water, and my daughter did suggest that. She thought maybe I overwatered it.
Yeah, you have to be careful with that, because if it's in a basket or foil, that the water is sitting up against the roots like that, that will cause it to can cause root rot. And it what's funny is that symptoms of overwatering look an awful lot like symptoms of underwatering. So you should really only water that plant when you lift the pot up and it's super light, and then carry it to the sink to water it and really let that water flush through the and out those drainage holes in the bottom. And that's really the best way to water a poinsettia. Try not to get the leaves wet and really just concentrate that water on the roots. But I suspect that probably going from the high light levels of the greenhouse to the low light levels of your house are probably the main factor that's causing that leaf drop.
And it will start sprouting again, too. You know, it'll start sprouting leaves. As the color fades, you'll get some other leaves coming up on the stalk.
Okay.
And Jingle Bells is a really cool variety. I like that one a lot. That's a different,
really nice.
Different type of poinsettia.
Yeah. Now, the reason I probably overwatered, our house is pretty warm. Like this time of year, you know, it's really cold outside, so we keep our house pretty warm. And maybe that was the fault. I thought maybe it needed more water because of the heat in the house, you know.
Yeah, a very warm house can also affect poinsettias, in that, especially if you have it near like a heat register or, you know, sitting on top of a radiator or something like that. That can also cause that foliage to dry up and crinkle. So do be careful about that.
Actually, we have it for a centerpiece in our table.
Okay, that's good. So it's not near. And is it a nice and bright location there?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, perfect.
Good. So I think you should just stay the course. Not worry too much when those leaves fall off. And a lot of poinsettias will actually go through a dormant period where everything falls off and the bare sticks. And you're like, oh my gosh, what's going on? And then you can even just put it in your garage and just water it very sparingly at that point. And then when the weather warms up in the middle, end of May, you can take that plant outside and it will grow all new leaves and it'll be beautiful, lush, tropical looking plant in the shade garden somewhere. And then bring it back indoors in the fall. So, you know, don't give up on it.
Okay, well, I am a gardener, too. I plant a big vegetable garden during the springtime, and we live off of that during the summer.
Oh, that's great.
Well,
wonderful.
Now you can be a poinsettia gardener.
Yep. Thanks for your call.
Okay,
Happy New Year.
Thank you.
All right, there's our buddy Brad. 866-391-1020. Dollar Bank Instant Access, KDK.com. Eric from Dormont, congratulations on winning that $25 gift certificate from Janoski's.
Well, you had something interesting happen with an amaryllis, huh?
I did. Well, you know, amaryllis, I was given this bulb by the good folks at White Flower Farm, and I was so excited to grow it because I haven't grown an amaryllis in a long time. But then I found out that it's like one of the most poisonous plants for cats. So I had to put it in a location that they really couldn't get to, which is on top of the refrigerator for a while. But then it got too tall for there. So then I moved it in this plant stand in the corner that they really can't jump on. And I felt like I felt good about the location that I had it. But we went away over the holidays and they get really bored and they make lots of trouble when we're gone. So I thought
the amaryllis or the cats?
The cats, not the amaryllis. But who knows what amaryllis do when you're not home? I don't know. So I thought, well, you know what? When we go away, I'm just going to put it in the garage. It's really cold in our garage, not freezing, but very cold. I thought, I'm just going to put it in the corner of the garage for while we're away. And then if it makes it, it makes it. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Well, we came back. And what was funny is that, you know, when amaryllis start to open, they progress so quickly. But what happened was it put it in a holding pattern. And when we left, the one flower stalk was in full, beautiful bloom, but the other one was still buds. And that's exactly what it looked like when we came back almost 10 days later. Because of those cold but not freezing temperatures, it put in a holding pattern. And now I moved it back up onto that little table again. And the second bud is almost... So we didn't miss any of it. I was like, oh, we're going to miss it because I'm going to be away. But it turned out perfect.
I've got a bunch also from White Flower Farm. And the morning sun was coming through the bud. And you could see it made it translucent.
Oh, cool.
And I posted a picture of it on my Instagram. And you can see that dark flower is just about, it might be today, it might be tomorrow, just about ready to explode. And I just, I just love those flowers. I was writing about, you know, amaryllis and paper whites, you know, they're traditionally grown as holiday plants. But like for amaryllis, boy, I like them any time of the year. And since I have so many, they're blooming all the time. You know,
it's like
they're going to get here. I'm going to have a bunch in February. So it's just a great, easy thing to just throw on the windowsill and enjoy some flowers, especially when you can get like this one that sent me. I can't wait till it blooms, called Rebecca, because it's fragrant. Mm-hmm. Then, what's the other one? Just this giant one. I can't remember the name of it. I'm getting too old for this. but I just love when they bloom, and they're so easy to take care of.
Yeah, you know? I'm looking forward to trying to get this one to return next year, too. That's going to be a nice challenge.
Well, I was doing everything just about wrong. Everything that we've been talking about, according to the head gardener at White Flower Farm, you know, I was just doing what I was taught, which was putting it in the shade, fertilizing the heck out of it. But she's putting them in full sun and keeping them watered and barely fertilizing them and getting them to come back. And the thing is, when you put them into that dormancy in the end of the summer, she just lets them sit and they tell her when the water is to come, because without water, they'll start to send up just the tip of the bud looking for, like, is it time yet?
Yeah.
And so
that's when she starts to water.
That's when she starts to water them. But she goes, it's a pain because 4 or 5 will do that, but then 2 or 3 won't, and you'll forget about them. And then she says, I'll have amaryllis flowers on the porch in July. You know, she'll take the pot out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things that, you know, you just got to experiment with it and hope for the best.
866-391-1020. Dollar Bank, instant access, kdk.com. A new year, new you. Healthy recipes in the 8 o'clock hour. Join Frank Dantisi on the Coons Cooking Hour.
Doug and Jessica teach you how to keep it green. The Organic Gardeners. Biz Radio 1020, KDKA.
Well, I got a text from my friend Bill in Warrendale. -11 right now. What effect on my garlic? Well, as long as that garlic is mulched, you should be okay. If you got a nice layer of straw, which I tell everybody, give that blanket of straw over that garlic. I actually think it's a good thing to get cold for the garlic. Put it into dormancy. It'll be fine, unless it's not.
I did not mulch mine this year, so this will be an interesting...
You know, a couple years before the polar vortex, I talked to Ron at Enon Valley, or after the polar vortex, and he told me that a lot of people lost their garlic that didn't have that mulch on there. I've never lost my garlic, regardless of the temperatures, as long as I had that really thick layer of straw on top. Now, my fig tree, on the other hand, that I'm worried about. You know, yes, it's wrapped up and it's got straw around it and it's in a tomato cage and there's a little air going through it.
It might die back to the ground and only come out from the roots.
I'm thinking it might.
Yeah.
But, Bill, it'll be interesting to see this spring what happens to your garlic. I really think we're going to be okay.
Can you put mulch on it now if you have it?
Sure, sure.
So you could just put it on top of the snow?
It couldn't hurt.
Yeah.
Couldn't hurt. Of course, we're done with all the cold weather.
Well,
who knows? It comes again,
who knows? I mean, it's only early January.
Yeah, get a bale of straw if you don't have any on there and mulch your garlic.
Yeah, I'm going to go out there in minus 11 and mulch my garlic. That would be something you would do, but I'm not so sure I'm going to do it. I'll take the chance and see how it goes. So we have Mrs. Know-It-All.
That's right. Denise Schreiber, greenhouse manager for Allegheny Parks, is Mrs. Know-It-All. Happy New Year, Mrs. Know-It-All.
And Happy New Year to everybody down there. I came home from work Friday, and I'm not going back outside until tomorrow when I have to go back to work. There's nothing I want to do outside that's that important.
She is not mulching her garlic, is what she's saying.
I think we're all on board with that.
Yeah. So a couple of things. One is, you know, we haven't had a lot of snow, but, you know, some of our listeners get a little more than I do. And you can actually use snow as a windbreak on your plants, kind of pile it up against it. Now, you don't want to use anything where you've been salting your driveway or anything, but actually having snow up against your plants will actually give them some protection from this horrible weather and the wind, which has really, I think, been worse than the temperatures themselves.
So you're talking about using it as sort of an insulation, a little blanket, right over those plants. So what kind of plants? Perennials, shrubs, evergreens?
I don't think, you know, our perennials are down to the ground, and they're already protected by the snow cover. I'm talking more, you don't want to do a tree. That's way too much snow. But actually, shrubs, that actually helps protect them from drying out with these winds.
Mm-hmm. So sort of make just sort of like a donut of snow around that shrub?
When you were a kid, you used to make like a little fort, you know, if you wanted to hide behind and throw snowballs. That would be ideal, you know, is just to pile it up gently. You don't want it where it's going to break any branches.
Mm-hmm.
Just want it to protect it from the prevailing winds. You know, you don't have to cover the whole thing, but if you know which way the wind blows, you can actually protect it, you know, on that side there. And, you know, every little bit helps at this point.
And your neighbors won't look at you funny at all for being out there building a snow fort around your boxwood.
My neighbors went to Florida. They
care. Oh, that's right. They were smart, right?
When we have this extended cold like this, is there anything you think we should worry about as far as plants making it or most of the perennials?
You know, if you have any young trees and shrubs, that's a concern. I have a young Japanese maple. And I did wrap it. I have covers that I use to wrap it around. But even still, you know, prolonged cold weather like this can damage young plants. That's why we always tell people to make sure they water really well until we get a freeze rather than just a frost, because the plants are going to need every little bit of moisture in them.
Yeah, great. Excellent advice. Thank you so much, Denise. Stay warm today.
Yeah, I will.
I think we were talking about going down to the RV show this weekend, but sometimes there's a line out the door, and it's going to be awfully cold to have to stand in that line outside the door.
I think they'll figure out some way to get people inside.
I would hope so, but I don't know. That happened last year, and it was mighty cold waiting out in that line. So I think today might be a good day to just huddle around the fireplace and watch some movies.
Joanne in Whitehall, the last call of the morning with Doug and Jess on KDKA. Go ahead, Joanne.
Hey, Joanne. Better late than never. I had got some Calvin Coley plants, which I learned how to pronounce from you mentioning it on the program. And all of a sudden, they were doing beautifully. And every time I water them now, the end of the leaves, not all the leaves, are getting yellow and dying. And I thought, maybe it's the water. So I started to boil it and sterilize it. And it still is happening. And it happens after I water them. What am I doing wrong?
Is it primarily the older leaves, or is it higher up on the plant? Which leaves?
It could be the older, and it could also be the new little ones coming out whenever the blooms die.
Okay. Are they turning eventually? You know, I know you mentioned the tips of them are turning yellow. Are they eventually getting brown? Yes. Also, okay. So that's typically a sign of salt burn, which a lot of the fertilizers that we use are salt-based fertilizers, especially the chemical-based fertilizers. And that can happen when there gets to be a salt buildup in that potting soil. And this can happen on any houseplant. And we call it tip burn because what happens are those salts come up through the vascular tissue of the plant with the water, and they go as far as they can, which is at the very tip of the leaf, and they accumulate and collect there, and that burns out that leaf tissue. So this is why it's so important whenever you water any houseplant or even plants outside, why you should really take it to the sink and flush that water through and allow at least 20% of what you put in the top needs to drain out those drainage holes in the bottom. And in the process, that flushes out those excessive fertilizer salts that can build up in the soil. Sometimes they show up as like a white crust on the top of the soil. That's also a buildup of fertilizer salt. So you really have to make sure you're flushing that water through. Don't add any more fertilizer to it. You should never fertilize houseplants during the winter months. You really only do that starting in March.
That doesn't even really need much of anything. And again, that's another one that really likes it dry. It really thrives in with neglect. You know, I've got one that's been grown for 2-3 years on the windowsill, and you know, along with an agave, and I'm trying to think what else is in there. Something that really just, you know, another
like
succulent,
an aloe or something.
Another succulent that just every once in a while you look at it, and you're like, oh, you know, that needs a little bit of water, but you know, maybe for me, like seriously, once every 3 weeks or something like that for a plant like that.
Yep.
It's nice to see them bloom on the windowsill, though.
It sure is. Okay, do you think that does that sound like it'll help you out a little bit there?
All right, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Let's take a break. We'll come back, wrap it up with Doug and Jess. A couple of moments on News Radio 1020 KDK. Good morning.
Doug and Jessica teach you how to keep it green. The Organic Gardeners. News Radio 1020 KDK.
All right, we'll get the latest on the ever-changing weather. Supposed to get some accumulation here in this part of our world tomorrow, 2 to 4 inches throughout the day. AccuWeather forecast will be along right after CBS News, which comes your way with the world headlines at 8 o'clock, 2 minutes away. But our final moments now with Doug and Jess in this week's edition of The Organic Gardeners. Guys?
So my New Year's resolution is to do a better job with my tomatoes. You know, I didn't stake them last year. I just kind of let them do their thing. But I'm just bound to determine. I've already dumped manure there weeks ago onto that bed that's going to be for the tomatoes. I'm going to do a better job with my tomatoes. Anything for you?
You're going to have huge tomatoes if you just dump manure on there.
Oh,
you're
going to
have like 10-foot tall tomatoes.
I know.
I hope you get fruit on them.
Oh, it'll be good.
Make sure you test for phosphorus.
Okay,
if you have all that nitrogen on there, no phosphorus.
Lots of compost there. I just need a little bit more nitrogen.
I'm just telling you.
What about for your garden?
A New Year's resolution for my garden. I hadn't actually thought much about that. I'm not a big fan of resolutions because it's just, I don't know. I never keep them anyway. So.
I made mine way before New Year's.
I
just got to do a better job with my tomatoes. You know, I love homegrown tomatoes. I love growing them from seed. I grow 100 different varieties and give most of them away, you know.
Yeah.
But I didn't, it just fell through the cracks, you know, with everything else that's going on.
Well, you know what? If it makes you feel any better, I did a terrible job with my tomatoes this last year, too.
It does.
That was because I had that surgery and I couldn't get out there. So, you know, maybe we should both resolve to be better tomato parents next year.
Remember, the organic gardeners always aim to create a better place to garden
and a safer place to live.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly!